the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Coming up on the show, Mario tells about why walking is a good exercise. We also hear the Everyday Grammar Report. And we close the show with the lesson of the day. But first, Churchill, Manitoba is a small, rural Canadian town that lives with neighboring predators and loves it. That is because the predators, a polar bear population, attract the visitors who saved the town's economy after a military base there closed. Tourists wanting to see the bears bring millions of dollars into the local economy. However, the bears are entering the town more often in search of food. Researchers say the sea ice, where the bears normally hunt, is shrinking. Jeff York is with Polar Bears International, a nonprofit environmental group based in Manitoba. York said, "You're seeing more bears because there are more bears on the land for longer periods of time to be seen. And they are willing to take more risks, getting closer to people." There are about 600 polar bears in this western Hudson Bay population. Environmentalists say that is about half what it was 40 years ago. Humans in Churchill outnumber the bears, although not by very many.
"It has been more than 10 years since a polar bear attacked anyone in Churchill. But townspeople look out for each other and tourists with a warning system and guards. There is even a polar bear jail." Sergeant Ian Van Nest is a Manitoba Province Conservation Officer. He recently guarded the streets of Churchill in his truck. It was the beginning of polar bear season in Churchill. The vehicle is equipped with a rifle and a barred back seat to hold anyone he might have to arrest. Van Nest saw a crowd of people who were watching a bear. He looked around for trouble in the area and then quietly spoke to the group's leader. "How are you today?" Van Nest asked. The group leader answered that they were all right and then asked if their gathering place is acceptable to Van Nest. "You're good," the officer answered. "You've got a lot of distance there," he added. So the tour group continued to watch a polar bear on some nearby rocks.
Visitors interested in seeing the polar bears saved Churchill from shrinking out of existence when a military base there closed in the 1970s. The closure led to a drop in Churchill's population from a few thousand residents to about 870. A 2011 government study found that the average polar bear tourist spent about $5,000 per visit. The tourism adds more than $7 million yearly to the economy of the little town. Churchill has a few nice restaurants and more than 25 places where visitors can stay. We're used to bears, so when you see one, you don't start to tremble, Mayor Mike Spence said. It's their area, too. It's important how the community coexists with bears and wildlife in general to really get along. We're all connected. Churchill residents show polar bear pride in a way that mixes terror and fun. You know we're the polar bear capital of the world, right? We have the product. It's just about getting out there to see the bears safely, said Dave Daly, who owns a gift shop, runs dog sleds, and promotes the city. He also is a former president of the Chamber of Commerce, an office that supports business activity. The former military base had a rocket launch area. It seemed to keep bears away. When it closed, the bears started entering the town more often, longtime residents said. So Churchill and province officials put together a polar bear alert program to make sure the community members were looked after and protected, said Spence, who has been Churchill's mayor since 1995.
The town's old curfew siren sounds nightly, warning people that it is time to go inside to be safe from bears. Georgina Berg recalls growing up in the 1970s near Churchill, where many First Nations people lived. First Nations is used in Canada to identify Native people. She remembers how differently her father and mother would react to seeing a bear in the past. She said her father would not pay attention to them. He said, "If you don't bother them, then they won't bother you," she recalled. When a bear came near in later years, after her father had died, her mom was frightened. Everybody was yelling, and all the kids had to come in, and everybody had to go home. And then we stayed silent in the house for a long time until we knew for sure that bear was gone, Berg recalled. For Van Nest, the provincial officer, the recent meeting with a group of bear watchers was different. The group was about 100 meters away from the bear. He said the bear was putting on a bit of a show for the tourists. "This is a great situation to be in," he said. "The tourists are a safe distance away, and the bear's doing his natural thing, and not being harassed by anybody." I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Many medical experts say that walking is an easy way to improve physical and mental health, support fitness, and prevent disease. They advise that walking is a great first step toward a healthy life, although other forms of exercise are also important. Dr. Sarah Eby is a sports medicine physician with Mass General Brigham in the state of Massachusetts. Eby said walking has many good effects and people do not need extra things. "You don't need equipment, and you don't need a gym membership," Eby noted, "and the benefits are so vast." The U.S. Surgeon General, a federal health officer, recommends that adults get at least 2.5 hours of moderate intensity physical activity every week. Walking helps meet that goal. Exercise lowers the risk of heart disease, high blood pressure, dementia, depression, and many kinds of cancer. Walking also helps blood sugar levels, is good for bone health, and can help people lose weight and sleep better. That is what Julie Schmid said. She is a health care worker with Norton Healthcare in Kentucky, which runs the free Get Healthy Walking Club. Walking is also a relatively low-impact exercise that puts less pressure on joints than other exercises while strengthening the heart and lungs. James Blankenship is 68 years old. He said joining a walking club at the Louisville Zoo last year helped him recover after a heart attack and a complex triple bypass heart operation in 2022. "My cardiologist says I'm doing great," he said. Some say walking is not enough. Anita Gust teaches exercise science at the University of Minnesota, Crookston. Gust said walking is not enough for overall health and well-being because it does not provide resistance training that builds muscle strength and endurance. Some health experts say that is especially important for healthy bone development in women as they age. Experts recommend adding other activities at least twice weekly. These could include using weights, gym equipment, or one's own body for resistance exercises. Training that improves flexibility, like yoga or stretching, can also be helpful. Many people have heard about the walking goal of 10,000 steps a day. This advice dates back to a 1960s marketing campaign in Japan. But experts note that this is only a guideline. Schmid said the average American walks about 3,000 to 4,000 steps a day, and it is fine to increase that number to 10,000. Setting a time goal can also be useful. Schmid suggests dividing the recommended 150 minutes per week into 30 minutes a day, or 10 minutes three times a day, for 5 days. During rainy or snowy weather, people can walk in malls or on treadmills. As they become seasoned walkers, they can speed up or walk up hills while still keeping the activity level moderate. "If you can talk but not sing," Eby said, "that's what we consider moderate intensity exercise." I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Every year around the Thanksgiving holiday, a strange ceremony happens in Washington, D.C. The president stands outside the White House, gives a brief speech, and then officially pardons a turkey. A pardon is a declaration that someone will not be punished. You might be asking yourself, what is the connection between turkeys, Thanksgiving, and grammar? In today's report, we explore what turkeys can teach you about English verbs. In particular, we will show you how Thanksgiving can teach you to use stative verbs. We will also show you the difference between stative and progressive verbs.
The term stative verb refers to a verb that has a stative meaning. In other words, these verbs show or describe conditions or situations that do not do anything but exist. Verbs that commonly have a stative meaning include verbs that show emotional states, such as love and dislike, verbs that describe sense perceptions, such as smell or taste, verbs that show existence, such as seem or look. In the present tense, a verb with a stative meaning is generally used in its simple form. I love turkey, or Americans like turkey, are two examples. Verbs that have stative meanings are generally not used in the progressive tense. So, you will probably not hear a native speaker say, "I am loving turkey," or "Americans are liking turkey."
Do not fear. We can use our Thanksgiving example to make the point clearer. Imagine you are at an American store. You hear a conversation between a customer and a store employee. The customer wants to buy a turkey that weighs 10 pounds or 4.5 kilograms. Unlike the turkey from the pardoning ceremony, this turkey will have a sad fate, the dinner table. The conversation you hear might go like this.
How much does that turkey weigh?
It weighs 10 pounds.
How much does it cost?
It costs $20.
In the dialogue, you can hear two examples of stative verbs, weigh and cost. The butcher said, "The turkey weighs 10 pounds," and "The turkey costs $20. In both cases, the verbs have a stative meaning. The butcher is describing a condition or situation that simply exists, the weight and cost of the turkey. Now imagine you are eating Thanksgiving dinner with an American family. You might hear any one of the following sentences.
I love turkey.
I dislike turkey.
The turkey smells wonderful.
The food tastes great.
The turkey seems undercooked.
The turkey looks awful.
All these sentences include stative verbs. You might notice that the verbs are also in the simple present form.
So, why would an English speaker not say, "The turkey is seeming undercooked," or "I am disliking turkey"? Susan Conrad and Douglas Biber are two English grammar experts. They say that, in general, English speakers use the progressive tense only when the subject of the verb actively controls the state or action. In addition, English speakers generally use the progressive only when the verb describes an action or state that happens over an extended period of time. So, you would not hear an English speaker say, "The turkey is seeming undercooked," because the subject of the verb, the turkey, does not control its state, being undercooked. For the same reason, you would not hear an English speaker say, "I am disliking turkey," because the verb's subject, I, probably does not have control over the action of disliking turkey. Now, some verbs can have stative and progressive meanings. Consider these examples.
The food tastes good.
The president is tasting the food.
In the first sentence, the food does not control whether it is good or bad. As a result, the verb taste has a stative meaning because it simply describes the condition of the food.
In the second sentence, the president is tasting the food. The subject of the verb, the president, has control over his action. In addition, the action takes place over an extended period of time. The president must think about tasting food, then raise the food to his mouth, then consider its quality. So, you could say that the verb taste in this example has a progressive meaning.
The next time you are reading or listening to the news, pay special attention to the verbs. Notice when the progressive form is used and when the simple form is used. Then ask yourself why. Does the verb subject control the action? Does the action occur over an extended period of time? Or does the verb simply describe a condition that exists? If you are still confused about whether you should use a simple or progressive verb in your own conversations, Conrad and Biber have one tip that might help you. They say that in conversations, English speakers use simple verbs around 120 times in every 1,000 words. Progressive verbs are much less common. They appear fewer than 20 times in every 1,000 words. I'm Alice Bryant.
And I'm John Russell.
Welcome to the lesson of the day on the Learning English Podcast. My name is Andrew Smith.
And my name is Jill Robbins. Thanks for joining us. Today's lesson will help you learn more about the English you hear in our video series, Let's Learn English. The series shows Anna Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C. Here's Anna introducing herself.
Hello. My name is Anna Mateo.
Today's lesson talks about the verbs hope and wish. Wish and hope are similar, but we generally say the word wish when we think it is unlikely that we can or will do something.
So if I say, I hope I can finish my homework by tomorrow, that means I'm not sure I can finish it. But it also means I think I might be able to finish on time.
But if I say, I wish I could finish my homework by tomorrow, that means I do not think it is possible for me to finish on time. And by saying wish, I express the idea that I want a situation that is different from my real situation.
Andrew, is there something you cannot do but wish you could do?
That's a good question. I think I'm pretty happy with what I can do, but I wish I could speak more languages. I think I would like to speak Chinese. How about you, Jill?
I wish I could go scuba diving. I have a certification, but I don't have the chance to go to a place to dive nowadays. Now, let's listen to Anna in Lesson 10 of Level 2 of Let's Learn English. She is talking on the phone with her friend, Bruna. Be sure to listen for the verbs hope and wish.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Bruna. What's up?
I thought we could meet for lunch today.
I wish I could, but I can't. I have to research Peru for a story.
How's it going?
Not so good. I've been reading about Peru, and listening to Peruvian music. I really want to understand Peru. I hope it's enough.
You should visit Peru.
I wish.
You can.
Bruna, I don't have the money or time to go to Peru. My deadline is tomorrow.
No, I don't mean to really go there. The museum where I work is having a Peruvian festival today.
Anna? Anna? Anna, are you there?
At that last part, Anna got so excited when she heard about the festival that she just left her office and forgot to say goodbye on the phone. Now, let's talk more about the verb wish. We wish for things we cannot do, be, or have at the present time. That's why when Bruna asked Anna to go to lunch, Anna said,
I wish I could, but I can't. I have to research Peru for a story.
For things we cannot do but wish to do, we add the modal could after the word wish. Listen to these three examples.
I wish I could speak Chinese. I wish I could visit my family more often. I wish I could save more money.
In those three examples, the speaker cannot speak Chinese, cannot visit family, and cannot save money. But the speaker wishes he could do those things.
Next, for things we do not or cannot have, we put the word had after the word wish. Listen to these examples. We'll say what we don't have and then what we wish for.
I don't have much time.
I wish I had more time.
I don't have many friends.
I wish I had more friends.
Next, for situations or states of being, we change the form of the verb be. After the word wish, we say were. Listen to these examples. We'll describe a situation and then say the different situation we wish for. I am not young.
I wish I were younger.
It is not sunny today.
I wish it were sunny today.
You are not here with me.
I wish you were here with me.
Now, here's one more example with Bruna and Anna. They meet at the museum. Listen for the verbs hope and wish.
Don't forget, this festival also shows Peruvian art.
I hope I have time to see everything.
Anna, I wish I could join you, but I have some work to do.
Of course, of course. You go back to work. I'll check out the art.
Andrew, I wish we had more time to give our listeners ways to practice using the verb wish.
Me too, but don't worry. In our next lesson of the day, we're going to explain more and give our listeners ways they can practice using the verb wish.
I hope they will listen to that lesson.
Me too. And we hope you've enjoyed today's lesson. Remember that you can also find us on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks for listening. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
Show for today, but join us again tomorrow to keep learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.